This is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions and views expressed on this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. Good morning, everybody. This is Katrina Kirkaby, and this is In the Garden Show, produced by UC Master Gardeners. I am, like I said, Katrina Kirkaby, your host for the hour. This week's topic is going to be something that will be so much fun. It is called Water Thrifty Cottage Gardens. And I am so lucky to have with me Gail Lamb here. Welcome, Gail.
Oh, hi, Katrina.
Gail is incredible. Gail is also a Rose. Gail Rose Lamb is an Orange County native and a UC Master Gardener. Gail is active member in the UC Master Gardener Speaker Bureau. Her horticultural interests range the gamut from roses to landscape design. Currently, Gail volunteers through the Master Gardener program and leads the Design Charrette project. Gail was a member of the Orange County Rose Society and the American Rose Society. In 2007, she became a certified ARS consulting rosarian. I'm really impressed. I know how much work that is. Gail has worked in the horticultural industry at several garden centers in Orange County and for several years has owned her own garden design and floral design business. She was once a private gardener at the home of Mary Lou Hurd and later was a founding board member of the Mary Lou Hurd Garden Tour. Gail is a longtime resident of Irvine and enjoys cooking from her backyard, gardening, and sharing her gardening knowledge with her new granddaughter, Evelyn. Well, Gail, I am so thrilled to have you here today because we're going to talk about something which a lot of people don't realize they could really have. Mm-hmm. You know, in Southern California, we're always concerned about water. And I think if we're mindful, we can do a lot of things. And today what we're going to talk about is if we're mindful, if we're smart, we could actually have a water-thrifty cottage garden.
Right.
That is really exciting. Gail, first of all, for our listeners, could you tell our listeners what a cottage garden is?
Well, a cottage garden is usually those old-fashioned, beautiful flowers you see in a painting, maybe, with picket fences and arches and roses and just little flowers and pathways that usually have plants that have romantic names like Love in a Mist or Love Lies Bleeding. Those are quintessential cottage plants.
You know, when I picture a cottage garden, I picture, you know, this white picket fence and mm-hmm. these roses growing in between them and flowers kind of not real manicured, just kind of going natural, like nature kind of brings them out.
Right.
And I've always thought that that had to have lots of water to be able to do that.
Right. That's what people, well, you do it for the traditional cottage plants. But if you want to be water thrifty, you could pick plants, not necessarily native plants, but you can pick plants that are California friendly, a little drought tolerant. And they do have some equivalent plants that look like cottage plants that are not native. And they are not, you know, full on water thirsty ones either. So you can choose plants that are, if they have a grayish color to the leaf, that indicates that they're drought tolerant, they don't need so much water. As for instance, lamb's ears, those silver gray leaves, the soft leaves, those are a great companion to roses, and they don't take any water hardly at all. In fact, they do poorly if you overwater them or water too much. There's Rose of Sharon, that's an old-fashioned rose. All the old-fashioned flowers.
Well, let me ask you a few questions,
Gail.
Let's say I wanted to do a cottage garden, which I thought I really couldn't do because I live here in Southern California. Mm-hmm. And so would I go out and I start looking at pictures of regular cottage gardens and then think about, you know, what plants could I substitute in there? Where would I start?
Well, you would probably start with foundation plants like the trees and shrubs. You start there, and maybe some of the hardscape, like the flagstone pathway.
So maybe a good idea is to start like with maybe something on a bare slate and say, this is the size of my backyard. What can I do with it?
Right. You would probably want some sort of design to begin with. So you would have draw the shape of your yard on a piece of paper, make it really simple. Just, it doesn't have to be to scale. This is just give ideas for yourself. Just a rough draft at first, I think, would be good. And maybe put in some elements that are cottagey but don't take any water, like a pathway or a picket fence or an arch, a bird bath, cottage elements.
Like a old bucket.
Right,
or a
wheelbarrow. That would be something like that. You know, anything old-fashioned like that would be fine, and that doesn't use any water at all. And then you would start using, start putting in some foundation things that are your backbone, like the trees. And they shouldn't be large trees. You would want to get the smaller patio trees. There's actually a section in the Sunset Western Garden book that, in the very beginning, that has plants for special situations. And one of those special situations is patio trees or smaller trees. And in that chapter or in that page is only small trees.
Yeah, that's a wonderful book. Would you mention the name of that again?
The Sunset Western Garden Book. It's specifically for our climate in the West.
You know, that might be something that listeners might be interested in. It's a nice book. A lot of us have it.
Well, most gardeners call that the Bible.
Yes, they call it the Bible, and it's something if you're thinking about redoing your garden, would you think that would be a good thing for them to possibly go look at?
Especially for designing, if they want to draw out some things or list some things that they want to install in their blank slate, mm-hmm. that's a good place to start. Like I said, that first 100 pages is all like special situations. So if you wanted plants for, let's just say, a cutting garden, there's a section in there that's plants for a cutting garden, or there's perennial color or fall color. There's plants to put near swimming pools. On specific pages right in the very front. And it's a great guide if you want to start from scratch.
Great. So now we're thinking that we now know what a cottage garden is. And we mm-hmm. all know that we could have a cottage garden, but we also want to be mindful of our plants. So where do we go from here?
Well, like I said, start with the trees, the smaller trees, things that are cottage-looking, like maybe a redbud tree. It is a native tree to Southern California. A redbud doesn't get very large, and it has heart-shaped leaves. How romantic can you get? I would probably try to get the forest pansy variety, though, because it has burgundy heart-shaped leaves.
I have three of those. I absolutely
love
those trees.
And they have a tap root, which the roots go down deep to get water, and so that makes them drought-tolerant.
I didn't know that.
Oh,
gosh, I learned
that.
So much about doing this show. It's wonderful. So we might look at our trees first. What are some other trees that you like?
I like, for this area, the crepe myrtle. Now, interestingly enough, I just came from the Master Gardener Conference in Long Beach, and there was a class there. One of the workshops there was about some of the newer plants that have just come out, and they just came out with a brand new crepe myrtle. And it's called a Delta Fusion, or there's a Delta Fuchsia, both. They have a burgundy leaf. It's a crepe myrtle with a burgundy leaf. And it has pink flowers.
Wow,
it's gorgeous.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and I thought that would be a good substitute for all those purple plums mm-hmm. that are growing. A lot of them in Newport, because I think there's a Newport variety, but there's a lot of trouble with the purple plum trees. Is that how you say that tree name? Do you know what I'm talking about? The ornamental mm-hmm. plum? Mm-hmm. That's burgundy. They're having some problems with those. And so a good substitute for that, if you can find it in the nurseries, it's brand new. It's called Crepe Myrtle Delta Fusion is the variety name. So you have to look at the tag and find that particular one. But you can see it. It'll have burgundy leaves. And none of the other crepe myrtles have those.
Now, you mentioned something to me earlier about when we're going out and we're looking at plants, about the sizes.
Right.
So if we're looking at trees for being more water thrifty, we
the
want
smaller trees.
Smaller tree versus mm-hmm. a huge tree,
right.
which needs a lot
water. More water. Right. So I've got a whole list of small trees that I'd like to refer to.
Oh, please tell us a little bit
about. The pineapple guava is a great tree. It has a gray-green leaf. Remember that gray indicates that it uses less water. It's drought tolerant. The pineapple guava has a beautiful little red flower. It almost looks like a fuchsia flower. and the hummingbirds go crazy for that tree.
Brings some wildlife into
it. It's a small tree. It's a beautiful shape and beautiful color, and it's just a wonderful little doer, a good doer.
What was the name of that again?
It's a pineapple guava.
And about how tall do they get?
I think they get maybe 10 to 15 feet. Sometimes trees in Southern California get a little taller than it says on the tag. I always, when I read the tag that says 10, 15 feet, I always add five more feet because they're just happy here. But I have a whole list.
Oh, why don't you tell us a little bit about some trees?
Like the strawberry tree?
Yes, please tell us about
that
strawberry
tree. It's wonderful. It's very drought tolerant, and it has beautiful flowers that turn into little fruits that look like dangling strawberries from the tree. And the smoke tree. I love a smoke tree. The royal purple smoke tree has burgundy leaves as well, but they're rounded. And then they flower with this fluffy white smoke. It's like a big cluster of smoke coming out of the tree. Oh. I once planted it behind a fireplace, outdoor fireplace.
And how did it turn out?
Well, I love that. You know, that was my little secret, that it was a smoke tree, and it was right behind the fireplace. And it's just beautiful. The purple is very pretty.
And what was the name of that again?
It's a smoke tree.
Smoke tree.
And the variety that I like is called Royal Purple. And, of course, in this climate, you can do a lot of fruit trees that are drought-tolerant, maybe the pomegranate, apple trees. I think fuchsia, Fuji and Anna do well here.
There's actually, I have both of them.
Do you have those?
Both of those do really well. I particularly like the Fuji.
Do you have the peach tree, the Red Baron?
Yes.
That's my favorite peach tree.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Yes. And they're drought-tolerant once they're established.
But they do need water.
Well, of course, you don't want to go without watering those, of course.
But oh yes, mm-hmm. There's some wonderful peaches, just really pretty.
Wonderful.
They look beautiful in the yard.
I think that would be fine for a cottage garden. You have to have some kind of fruit, some kind of, edible garden parts too.
You know, it's beautiful to look at too when they come when they in the spring when everything comes out. It's beautiful foliage.
Right.
And it makes it feel so quaint.
There's also, if you don't want too much burgundy or too much purple leafed plants, you can use the dwarf olive tree called Little Ollie. It doesn't get large.
Now, does that produce olives?
The Little Ollie, no.
Oh,
it's fruitless.
I tell you,
I use it as a shrub, but you can train it as a little tree if you wanted to.
They're pretty trees.
Yeah.
They're really pretty, and it's nice that they don't produce olives. Now, that sounds horrible for me to say, but mm-hmm. when I moved into our house, we had an olive tree, mm-hmm. and it was in the worst location because it shed on my walkway, mm-hmm. on my stairs,
yes.
and on my deck, and there was no way mm-hmm. that we could keep people from not tracking it into the house. It was a beautiful tree, but it was the tree in the wrong place.
Right.
You know, and it was.
And it gets so big. And
yeah,
the roots are so big as well, take up a lot of soil space.
It completely blocked our view. It took up, mm-hmm. it hid part of the deck. And it was like a wall, and it was a beautiful tree. It just didn't have the right home.
Right. So you can get a smaller one next time. They do have dwarf olives, if you do want an olive tree. It's just for the look, for that gray green.
But
look
I think
too.
The ollie is
little
really
ollie.
Nice because it's a lot of little ollie. It's a lot of work if you want to have olives. You
yeah.
know, people don't realize
it's an orchard. Any orchard. Orchards are not for wimps. It's a lot of work for any kind of.
So that's not what we're talking. We're talking about. We want to. This show is about having a beautiful cottage mm-hmm. garden, which we see kind of. I think of Europe. I think of England. I think of mm-hmm. the back east, and we could still have that feel without mm-hmm. having a huge using huge amounts of water.
And a large part of that is having flowers to have the cottage garden too. The trees are fine. But we need some flowers.
Well, let's talk
so there are some shrubs with flowers.
Let's talk a little bit more about our trees. Did we cover all the trees?
Well, pretty much, yeah.
Okay,
I think so.
The pomegranate tree.
The pomegranate, the wonderful variety. It's called wonderful. That is supposed to be the best. I would recommend that one.
Now, pomegranates can get a bit big, can't they?
Yes, mm-hmm. there are dwarf pomegranate
okay.
shrubs, too, that are, I don't think they're edible, but there is a dwarf pomegranate.
Well, my neighbor has one that produces, and she just keeps it trimmed down. It's not a dwarf.
Oh, yes,
it's
a large one. You keep it trimmed down.
So that's something you have to be mindful of.
It's nice to keep it about shoulder height because then you can reach and harvest.
Yeah, it's just, actually, I keep pretty much all my fruit trees not tall anymore. I keep them trimmed down. So
that's the new way that the UC recommends. And you know what? It's less water. It's water,
less water
thrifty.
And let's say the peach tree. You don't need 400 peaches.
Right.
You know, and you're going to have, if you have 400 peaches and you don't have a way of getting rid of them, they're going to be dropping.
So thin your
the
fruit.
The rats will get to them.
Right.
So if you keep it smaller.
And thin the fruit.
Thin
remove
the fruit.
Excess bud, the excess new fruit to get better quality and larger peaches. You can take off some of those. And plus you use less water.
You know, a lot of people don't realize that you could have a smaller tree, smaller fruit tree.
Yeah.
You know, we have a lot of houses here that don't have a lot of room.
Right.
And I think this keeping the smaller fruit trees has a lot of benefits for not only doing a cottage garden, but just in general amount
and
of
I
water.
And I recommend that for all the shrubs and all the perennials to use less water. Don't let them get as big as they want to get. Don't let them use up all the water. That way you can, and you don't have to fill up every space either, like in the on the soil.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to have plants everywhere. You can have blank spaces with mulch. That's another good way to save water, is to mulch, give it a nice mulch, maybe 2-3 inches. I actually would go for 3 or 4 inches if you want to conserve water. And it controls the weeds. It also insulates the soil from the cold and from the heat. Mulch feeds the soil. If it's a compost type of a mulch, it will feed your soil, feed your trees and shrubs and flowers. And also it looks very nice to have that beautiful, it's just a beautiful,
I find
it's like frosting on a cake.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes I find that if you don't have enough time to do everything, and if you just mulch, it cleans up the yard.
Before a garden tour?
Yes.
Or before your friends are coming over, just put the mulch down.
Master gardener trick.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's most gardeners we know about.
You can
that.
Put it over old leaves. If you don't want to rake the leaves up, I just put the mulch right over top of the leaves. And then they compost underneath there. So you save work. But it does conserve water. But what I'm saying, too, is that it's very nice to look at that clean look. And you don't have to put plants everywhere. You can have a swash of mulch. You can have a blank space. It defines the other plants that are around it, the other beds, the
kind
other
of makes them pop.
The drifts that are around that expanse of mulch. It makes those plants stand out like a stage.
It's
almost like a spotlight on them if you mulch in a larger area. So don't have to plant every inch evenly spaced. Just do drifts and groups and then mulch in between with a nice big piece of mulch, you know, nice area of mulch.
And I find it looks really beautiful and it saves a lot of water. I know even
saves
on
a
hot
lot of
days,
water.
I go out and check my trees and check my plants and I have that big, thick amount of mulch.
I love
it's
it.
It's drier than
it's
dry
my favorite
on the top.
Thing.
But I go underneath a few inches.
It's nice under there.
It's nice under there.
Climate controlled under there. You know, another thing about mulch is it keeps the weeds down. You don't want your weeds to get out of control because they take water. They're taking water away from your plants. If your plants have weeds around them, that's where the water's going, and the nutrition. So keep those weeds from getting established and take them out when they're small, before they set seed. You know, you've got to keep those weeds out, and you'll have less and less and less if you just keep them out.
You go out and just pick a few weeds, or pick as many as you can.
Yeah,
and try
therapeutic.
To keep them, therapeutic. You can keep them under control.
Yeah,
and
they won't use up all
water,
your water.
You save
perfect.
You save energy from having to do a lot more weeds.
And
later
mulching
on.
Is a way to keep them from germinating. There you go. Although the Santa Ana winds will bring them in, it'll be a lot easier to take them out because the mulch is nice and loose.
Yes.
You know,
mulch is a good thing. We've talked about that.
I'm
a lot
going to get some after this radio show. Actually, I've got my 4 bags ready to go pick up some right now.
Oh,
I can't wait. Yeah, because I've been removing some areas in my yard that need mulching now. So,
you know, we talk a lot about mulch on this show, and it's funny how every guest we talk about that is an expert talks about how important mulch is, but not only how important it is, how pretty it looks. So,
right,
mulch, everybody mulch.
Yes.
If you have a water thrifty cottage garden or not, mulch.
Well, I even see gardeners, they do use mulch, but when I go, sometimes I'll go to their house and the mulch is so thin that it's really not doing anything at all, and it disappears, it kind of composts down, it kind of decomposes down to the earth again. It's really not helping. You need a really 3 inches nice thick mulch. It just is nothing if you just put one little thin inch. It doesn't do anything really. Yeah. So go ahead and go for the big guns there.
Go do it. Have we talked about fruit trees. Did we miss any fruit trees? Any trees that we should be talking about?
If you want an idea for a drought-tolerant purple leaf tree again, you might want to try the chase tree. Have you heard of that?
I've heard of it. What does it look like?
Well, it's got purple leaves, of course, but it's very unusual, look to it. But people always, when I worked at a nursery, they would walk by some of the potted chase trees and they would say, "What is that tree? It's just so pretty." They really liked it. It has like a purple on one side of the leaf on the top side, and then underneath was like a, I don't know, like a silvery purple. It's kind of hard to describe the way it looks, but if you get a chance to go to a garden center, check out what a chase tree looks like.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's really great. And you know, I think also people, there's so many choices.
Yes.
And there's so many different mm-hmm. colors, so that's part mm-hmm. of the element when you're looking
right.
at doing this.
And look for the size it gets. It says right on the tag, if it's a reputable nursery or garden center, it will say how many feet it grows. Now, some people, they'll get, like, I don't know, trees that grow 100 feet, 60 feet. You know, they don't
plant them next to their
looks
house.
It looks so small when you get it, but, yeah, they plant it right next to the house or next to a sidewalk. They have no idea how tall that tree is going to get. For instance, my neighbor has a bay tree. She wanted to plant an edible tree, so she put it right inside her little planter and by the front door.
And how tall is this tree?
It started out, it was only 3 feet high, but that tree gets like 100 feet high. If you've ever seen them in people's yards, when they're mature, it would blow you away. I mean, our small yards here in the suburbs, it just takes up the whole block almost, you know. It's really big if you don't control it, and you can't. It's just meant to get that big. Yeah. So don't get trees that get way too big. Look for the size first. Research it in the Sunset Western Garden Book before you buy it. Or don't buy it that day. Go home and look it up in the Sunset Western Garden Book. See how high it gets, and then you decide whether you want to go back and get it.
You know, I think that as master gardeners, that's one of the big things we hear about is people planting something that looks really cute at the garden center, and they don't realize it could be a 30, 40, 50, 100-foot tree.
Yeah, it's not just for the water thriftiness of it either. It's also for the maintenance. You're going to spend so much money on the maintenance of that tree, pruning it, having somebody come out and prune it and lace it out every year. It's going to cost you forever, for as long as that tree lives. That's another added cost, too. So
be mindful.
It's water thrifty and money thrifty to get a smaller tree.
Okay, so mm-hmm. now we've talked about trees. How about we have shrubs?
Oh, there's so many cottage-looking shrubs that you can get.
Oh, Gail is lighting up right now. Ladies and gentlemen, I think we're going to hear some wonderful stuff. She is just
yes.
wet.
Well, one of my favorite plants is hydrangeas, but, of course, hydrangea means water. Its name means water. You don't really think of that as a water-thrifty plant, but there is something called a Mexican hydrangea.
Well, tell us about that.
It's very exciting. It has a smooth leaf, almost like a smooth leaf to hydrangea, and they're almost heart-shaped leaves too. But they thrive in full sun, and they have a cluster of pink flowers on them once a year that look just like almost like a hydrangea, and they're just breathtaking, and they really, you know, get your attention like a hydrangea would in an old-fashioned cottage garden. And
wow.
they're so water thrifty.
And there's something we could substitute for the regular hydrangea.
It's called a Mexican hydrangea or a clerodendron.
And does it bloom for very long?
It does maybe 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. It's not like a hydrangea blooms in late like a regular hydrangea, mm-hmm. blooms in late spring or early summer, and the blooms just stay on it mm-hmm. the whole season. But I think a Mexican hydrangea, I do clip them off when they turn brown. They do, you know, when they're old, they'll turn brown. I clip them off then and just enjoy the green leaves. But that's different than, it's not a hydrangea. It's a
clerodendron.
It gives
you the feel.
It gives you the feel and the look of a cottage garden. And they're water thrifty. And another plant that, you know, would bring that to mind would be like the butterfly bush, with the beautiful spiky purple or white or pink flower spikes. And it draws in the butterflies. That's always a backdrop for a lot of the cottage garden beds. Those are drought tolerant. If you want a small one, now they get really big. The butterfly bushes get very, very tall. However, I do cut them to the ground every winter, to the ground. But if you want to be water thrifty, there's a dwarf variety of butterfly bush. And it's called Lo and Behold.
So, you know, I have both.
Oh, I had one too.
And I like the Lo and Behold. It's mm-hmm. next to my I have a pond.
But
go ahead.
You liked the tall one better.
No, I like them both.
You
I
do?
I really do.
I prefer the larger one. But to be water thrifty.
But the one by my pond, it keeps it low. I get the color. I get mm-hmm. the butterflies. Mm-hmm. I can still see what's behind it because right. I want to see what's behind it. Mm-hmm. And it serves its purpose. Mm-hmm. Now, the tall one I have in another place, which is it could just grow, mm-hmm. and it's not an issue. But
do the butterflies come to the smaller one, too?
Oh, yeah.
See? There you go.
Oh, yeah. I'm now, every mm-hmm. personally, what I'm putting in my garden, everything's mm-hmm. got a purpose.
And which one uses less water? See?
Yeah.
The lower one. Because it's doesn't have as many leaves, so it's only common sense, right? There are a lot of other shrubs too, like the rock rose, but one surprising, two surprising cottage plants that are the same in both English cottage gardens and water thrifty cottage gardens would be lavender. Lavender is a staple of a cottage garden in England or Italy, but we can use it here. It's gray-green leafed, as you see, and it's a gorgeous scent, and they resent water. So if you are looking to cut back on your water bill, get some lavender, right?
It's beautiful, and they're easy to
beautiful.
Grow.
Beautiful, yeah.
It doesn't take much work either.
And it's not exotic. It's not hard to find. Another example is, and very controversial, I must say, is roses. Roses are drought-tolerant, but it seems like people think that they're using a lot of water, and they do. If they have, you know, if you want a lot of flowers, you have to water them. But if you're willing to get by with less flowers, you don't have to water them so much. They're tough old birds. They last in cemeteries for hundreds of years without anybody watering them or caring for them. Roses are very tough. In fact, I had someone recently ask me for advice on roses. They knew the drought was in full gear, and they came to me and said, you know, my church has a big rose bed, and they're thinking about taking out all the roses. Should we take out all of our roses because of the water situation? And I said, oh, no, please, please, they're established roses. You don't need to take them out at all. They're very drought tolerant and they're very forgiving. What you could do is you could cut them back. You could take them back to some long vertical canes, maybe 7 canes, and then you could take off some leaves. You can even take off roses if you wanted to take off roses, because they use water. So. If it's an extreme drought, remove some of the roses and remove some canes and leaves, and they'll get by. And also another way to get roses to get through water, like a water drought or an extreme drought, would be, remember, using less water means not watering every day. You would water deeply and infrequently. And that water will last longer than watering a little bit every day. That is a very important thing that gardeners need to learn, if they haven't learned already from the drought, is that we don't need to have our sprinklers on every day. So for roses, give them a deep soak and less frequently. I'll tell you another story. I once went to a seminar from Tom Carruth. He's a very famous hybridizer, Tom Carruth. I think he hybridized the Julia Child rose. And he told us that at the growers, in Central California, at the growers, they water their, out in the field, they have rows and rows of roses. They water their roses once every 2 weeks, but it's a deep soaking. And that's how they do. And you know how hot it is in the Central Valley, so don't be worried about taking roses out. They are drought tolerant. It's just that was just a myth. I mean, they're not going to look like lush with lots of leaves and roses if you cut back on the water and you cut back on the foliage, but it'll get you through an extreme drought. And then for the regular year, I suggest that you, without a drought, I suggest you just experiment and see how little water they can get away with. They are tough old birds, and they are made to exist. So don't worry about those guys. So lavender and roses are really good shrubs.
You know, and this is an advice about roses from a rosarian. Gail really knows her roses. So if you want to have roses in your garden, you can still do that. And be mindful. And, you know, sometimes I'll take the water that I get out of my sink as it's warming up, and I'll throw it on my roses to give them a little extra, or throw it on my favorite plants that need a little extra water.
Right.
There's ways around it, but it really depends on how much energy you want to put into it. Well, right now, I need to let everybody know that they are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, and that the opinions and views expressed on this show do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. Well, Gail, you know, the rose, I always think of roses when I think of cottage gardens.
Always.
Always think of roses.
You can have them. Don't be worried about that.
You can have them.
Especially if they're established. Don't remove the roses you do have. Yeah. Because a lot of people have been taking out their lawns, and they've been taking out their roses. Oh, but taking out the trees is... it's very bad, too.
Yes.
We all need the trees.
We need the trees. So let's talk a little bit more about some other shrubs that you would recommend that make it look water thrifty, so to speak. But still look like a cottage garden.
Well, there's one that's called African boxwood. Now, this shrub looks just like, well, not exactly like, but very similar to an English boxwood. And you know boxwoods are in all the cottage gardens in England. So if you want that look to carry through and make a small hedge maybe in front of your roses, you can use African boxwood. They have beautiful, feathery, delicate growth of leaves. And then there's a red stem that's very unusual. They can be
a red stem boxwood?
A red stem boxwood. It's called African boxwood. It's not anything like the English boxwood. It's not even in the same family. And this is from Africa, so it fits our climate. But you can make a small hedge on them. I wouldn't box them. You know, I wouldn't hedge them. I would just trim them with a clipper and trim them naturally so they look good. But you can make a row of them in front of your roses or in the front of your beds if you wanted to get that boxwood look, which carries through the cottage look, and still be water thrifty. And there are so many other shrubs that you could use. You can use rosemary.
So would you use rosemary? How would you use rosemary in your yard?
I would use that as like the foundation for maybe an herb garden type, and by the fruit trees. All the edibles I like to group together, and the things that need the same amount of water I like to group together. So water-thirsty plants can be grouped in islands to keep, and it saves water too, because you water that whole area the same instead of having them spread all throughout the garden. Different watering needs all throughout the garden. You can group those water needs together in a drift or an island, and that way can have a sprinkler just for that area, or you can water that area differently.
You know, that's wonderful because a lot of people will plant, they like a lot of plants and they don't look at how much water each one needs. So what you're saying is take all the ones with similar needs.
Similar needs and group them together.
In one sprinkling zone or one watering zone.
And then cluster them.
Cluster them in a watering zone and then another watering zone with similar watering needs.
It conserves water.
Conserves water and then you're not watering one too much and the other one not enough.
Right. And so then if you're using all the gray toned leaf things that for cottagey, like the lamb's ear and all that, which is considered an herb, I believe. And, you know, all the things that need the gray-leafed things. Of course, you don't want to put them all together, but you want to put some other colors, too, not all gray together, because you want to contrast a little bit, too.
Now, so when you were talking about the rosemary, before we went on the air, you told me a couple great ideas on how to keep rosemary under control.
Oh, about pruning them. So you can, the rosemary, especially that Tuscan blue variety, it will get side branching and they'll start falling down on the ground and rooting, which is fine, but it starts to get out of shape and it gets unruly, but what it really is happening is it's using up too much water because it's too large. I'd like to trim it up and take all the side branches off and leave only the center vertical canes that come up from the base. Just leave that center that's coming up vertically and take away all the horizontal branches that are on the outsides, trim it up, and you're removing almost half of all that overgrown rosemary, which means you're going to be water thrifty.
You're going to be water thrifty, and you're also going to be having something you can use in your own kitchen.
Yes.
You know, which is really nice.
Yes.
You don't have to
and that's out. Part of the cottage garden, too, is to have edibles. That's where your fruit trees come in. And your rosemary. Now, there's herbs like sage. I call it salvia, but it's sage. There's oregano. You can use thyme. That's a very water thrifty. And I would say that's where the grouping comes, the clustering into that area comes in handy. Because then all those type of herbs that are water thrifty will take the same amount of water.
So you're doing water thrifty, you're doing a cottage garden look, and you're probably
have edibles.
Edibles, and you're having things you could use in your kitchen, which is just wonderful to go out. You know, I know sometimes I go out and I hate to do it whenever I do it. If I run out of something and buy those little plastic containers, they're so expensive.
Yes.
And when you could just go in your backyard and do it.
Yes, and get your own thyme and your own sage. And you don't have to go to the grocery store. It's just wonderful to make a soup for fall, and then you can just go out. I made a soup 2 days ago, hadn't needed thyme for the butternut squash soup. I just ran out to the backyard and picked some.
It's also
so special.
It is special. Yeah. When you have people come over and they see it and they smell it, it adds to a quaintness of the warm and welcoming of your yard, saying, well, my yard produces food for my family and herbs that we eat, and it smells good, too.
Sometimes for guests, I'll hand them a scissors and say, oh, would you go out to the herb corner and get me some basil, please? And so they think that's, you know, special. They get to go out and pick some herbs for our meal.
And what they don't know, it's so easy to do.
Yeah.
It's so easy to do.
Herbs are just weeds. Like, they just grow. They don't like water.
And they just grow, and they're wonderful. And they're so much. And it does bring in that feeling of a cottage garden.
It does. It does. So we talked about some shrubs, but there's perennials that have a lot of flowers, too. Did you need to know any more shrubs?
Why don't you mention, is there any shrubs that we might have missed?
I think we talked, salvias. I don't know if that's more of a perennial, but I use a lot of salvias. I love the new, I don't know if it's new, the amistad it's called. It's beautiful purple flowers. Mystic spires is all over my yard.
I have mystic spires too.
The bees love it.
The
bees love it too. If you want pollination in your cottage garden, you need bees. Everybody is like worried now about our bees. So
I love that. Speaking of bees, what do you think of blue basil?
African blue basil. I love that. It's very hard to find. I found the regular African basil, but the blue, there used to be a blue purple one that was prettier, And I'm having a hard time finding it, so I might have to drive down to Fallbrook, go to those herb farms down in Encinitas and things like that.
Now, Gayla is serious about her herbs.
Mm-hmm. But the African blue basil is attracting the bees in my yard like crazy.
It's insane. I just can't believe
They're all over it. I can't prune it because they don't want me to go near it.
Exactly.
They buzz me, you know. I've never been bitten by a bee. Because you just don't swat them. You just don't disturb them.
I have it planted in my front yard, but next year I think I'm going to plant it down in my vegetables.
Because it'll bring the pollination in for you. That's all you need is one African basil. And they are drought tolerant. So,
and they are cottage garden look.
And they have that look, that spire look. But the salvias are great, too, for bringing in the bees. And they're drought tolerant. There's some beautiful varieties. The Mystic Spires, I can't say enough about. But there are perennial flowers that you need to bring in now, too. You can get by with just trees and shrubs, but if you really want to make it look cottagey, you would put in some flowers that call to mind those old-fashioned names what do they call that? They call it yarrow? Did they call that yarrow?
Yarrow?
Is that the common name?
I'm not sure, but I think I call it yarrow, but I don't know if that's correct or not.
I think that's the botanical name, and it might be the common name as well. There's always the moonshine variety, which is yellow, and that's been perennial of the year before. I voted perennial of the year, the moonshine. But I prefer, like, the paprika-colored one. That's also
a
nice one. And then there's a pink variety, too, that I like. But if you want to keep the color theme of cottage is pink, blue, and white.
But
you can add on all the other colors too, but that's the classic combination.
Well, would you say that again? I didn't know that.
Oh, a classic combination for an English cottage garden is pink, blue, or purple, and white. So you can keep that theme going if you want it to really look like a cottage garden by keeping to those colors. There's nothing wrong with you adding in a bit of buttery yellow or any other color you want, but if I'm just saying that's the typical. Mm-hmm. So if you like yarrow, but it only comes in yellow, they're also pinks and other colors too. So if you wanted to keep to pink, you could though. Mm-hmm. But there's flowers like juniper's beard. That's an old-fashioned flower, and that's drought tolerant.
Well, what does that look like?
Well, it has a little cone cluster at the top of the flower part. The shrub is, and that's not a shrub, it's a perennial, and that looks, you know, very small. It comes up about 1 foot, maybe 2 feet at the most. 1 foot, I never get it past 2, 1.5. But it has when it does flower, it's like a coral color flower, kind of a pinkish coral, and it's a cone shape, fluffiness.
Sounds beautiful.
But it does come in white, too. I will caution you, it is kind of invasive, but in a good way. In a good way, I don't mind it receding. I like the receding plants because you don't have to worry about water with the receding plants. They just come up. They're just happy to be there.
You know? Grateful plants.
Mm-hmm. I do have a list of receding plants, too, I believe, the seed plants that recede themselves, like Love in a Mist, which is the cottage garden flower, and it is water thrifty. It's a beautiful, very low ground cover type height, and it has beautiful, undescribable flowers, star-like blue flowers with some black antennas coming out of them. It's very hard to describe,
wow,
but so beautiful and very old-fashioned. You can always... have you ever seen Impatiens balfourii?
No.
It's an impatience it doesn't look like the impatience you see at the garden centers. It looks like a perennial. It has a beautiful looking flower, almost like a pansy pink flower. And they have seed pods that explode. And then they reseed in your garden like crazy.
Oh,
it's just beautiful. It looks like an old-fashioned perennial. Yeah. But of course it's for shade. And that was another thing I wanted to talk about. To get your plants to be more water thrifty, you can plant things in a little bit of afternoon shade. They will need less water. Sometimes our summer heat is just really intense. And sometimes if you just plant some trees for shade or or plant a sun plant in a little bit of afternoon shade. It uses less water. These are the impatiences for a shady spot, drought-tolerant shady spot.
Well, yeah, why don't you tell me some other things I think about is vines and bulbs.
Right. A vine that would be very drought-tolerant would be grape, and that's an edible too. Think about having a grape arbor or a grape on your pergola. They are very water thrifty when they're established. And you don't want to let them grow rampantly. You want to keep that growth control down. They'll just take off and just have put on so much foliage it's going to take all your water. I cut them back to the grapes clusters. Mm-hmm. You don't need anything after the grape cluster.
Gotcha.
So
keep them shorter.
The people
mindful.
Just let them go and go and go. No, I trim them, people say, well, how far back? Well, trim them right back to the grape cluster. And then everybody's happy. There's leaves before that, too, and the grape. And there's enough to cover them, grapes, so they don't get burnt. And you don't need any more than that. Anything more than that is excess. You don't need it. It's just wasted and wasting your water.
And how wonderful. There's another one I want to ask you about, which happens to be one of my favorites, mm-hmm. Wisteria.
You like wisteria.
I do like wisteria.
They're very drought tolerant. You need a very strong arbor to have them, but they actually prefer to be pruned hard. That's sometimes people ask me, how do I get my wisteria to bloom? It's not blooming. Well, they love to be pruned, and that's what you need to use less water too, is prune them hard.
And they're wonderful for trailing over top of trellises.
Beautiful.
I have one on a hill.
They smell so good.
It's growing up the pillars of a deck, mm-hmm. and then it's growing around the mm-hmm. rail of the deck.
And doesn't that look cottagey?
It looks so cottagey.
See?
And I didn't know I could have it.
There you go.
I didn't realize the water was turned off for a period of time on it.
And oh, it doesn't matter, does it?
Oh, it's still doing well.
Good.
Okay, bulbs. Why don't you tell me a bit about bulbs? Because I always think about bulbs when I think about cottage gardens. Can we
right.
do that and be
well, somewhat Well, not exactly the tulips. You can't have the tulips and all the fussy bulbs that you see at the store, that you see at garden centers or you see at the florist. You can't have all the, elaborate ones. But you can use... I would say the bearded iris is a very good bulb. That's more like a rhizome, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But they are drought tolerant. Bearded iris are drought tolerant. So
if you want,
go.
There you go.
Yeah. Do the bearded iris. And then the Crocrosmia. I don't believe there's the common name for that. It's that red-orange flower, mm-hmm. beautiful red-orange clustered flowers, so pretty, and they're drought tolerant. They come back every year. These things are going to re-bloom. We come back every year, and you don't have to dig them up and store them. But the bulb that looks the most cottagey is called Leucogium, or summer snowflake.
And what does
called.
That look like?
It's so beautiful. It looks just like a cottage garden. It has very thin green leaves, and then up shoots these clusters of white bells that hang upside down, and on the edge of each petal has a little lime green dot. It's just charming.
What's
it's just charming. It's called Summer Snowdrop. It's a Leucogium. And you can buy that at all the garden centers in the fall when they sell their bulbs. If you don't see in that bin, if you don't see Leucogium, ask the manager, would you order those Leucogium for me next time? Or you can a really good garden center will order for you, but usually I see them in independent garden centers around town. I've seen them at some of the most common garden centers, not at the big box stores, but the independents, I believe, that have cottagey garden beautiful flowers.
Yeah.
But those are my favorite. I've had them for 30 years. The bulbs just stay in the ground. I don't dig them up. And then when the foliage turns yellow, I cut them off, throw them away, and I forget about that they're there. I mulch over them, and the next year they're all back again. And they don't care about water.
Oh, isn't that nice? Mm-hmm. Oh, we can do so much, things we don't think we could do. Now tell me about some I can't believe we're getting close to our time. So tell me about some seeds that reseed themselves.
Oh, then
would that make that
the love and the mist? Yeah, we talked about that. The love and the mist, mm-hmm. and the impatience balfouri. Larkspur is a good reseeder. It reseeds itself. Larkspur is a very old-fashioned cottage perennial. I love nasturtiums. I never water them. They just come, and they're an easy edible flower for children to plant. Once you plant them, you never have to plant them again. They just reseed themselves everywhere. They might get wild and crazy, but I just pull them out. Just pull them out, throw them out if they get too big for you. But they reseed and don't have to. I never water them.
So. Amazing. Mm-hmm. Is there certain plants that you should stay away from or be more careful that might be a little bit troublesome in our yard?
Oh, sure. To be invasive in any garden, I would not ever plant morning glory or Mexican primrose, thinking that they're water thrifty and that they're going to be a cottagey type look. They are very invasive, and once you plant them, basically you don't get rid of Mexican primrose. It just keeps reseeding and invading your every area.
So do not plant Mexican primrose.
Called Mexican evening primrose.
Okay.
It's that little pink ground cover type thing that looks beautiful, and everybody is so charming. Everybody buys it, and then
it's kind of like ripping out, trying to get rid of a mint.
It's worse than mint, I think.
It's worse than mint. Oh my goodness.
And then morning glory, that morning glory that covers the telephone poles.
And covers everything
your
else
barn.
In your barn. It'll just go crazy.
Yeah, so don't plant that, even though you think it's water thrifty. Even though it looks cottage garden, please stay away from that.
And now there's this, you've given us so much, and we have about 4 or 5 minutes left to talk. Maybe we should go over, quickly recap everything about what a cottage garden is, how you can do it water thrifty, things we could put in it that might make it look gardeny.
Oh, you mean like the flagstone path? Mm-hmm. That's very nice because it lets water percolate through if you don't cement the flagstone path, then the rainwater can permeate right through the cracks in your flagstone path, and it will water your garden.
How about lighting?
Lighting is a good, that's a good topic too, especially at night. You want to have lighting so that if you want to go out to the garden and pick some herbs for your dinner, it's lit up back there, you know, and it looks nice when you have company. I have one friend who said she thinks that lighting was bad for the plants because they have their own cycle, daytime, and then they have dark. They need darkness at night, and she's weary about putting in night lighting.
You know, we have night lighting,
but I think it's charming.
We don't have it on a cycle; we have it as needed.
Well, as needed, right? That's what I have.
Over, we just
exactly
flip on a few lights, and the trees.
Right. I have a remote control for the bistro lights, and I have solar, like little solar lights too, in some areas. Because when you go out to take out the trash sometimes, it's nice to have a lighted path so that you don't step on a snail.
So the lighting can do a lot. Mm-hmm. Well, Gail, I know this has been a really wonderful hour. I'm really appreciative that you've come and talked to us about this because really a lot of us don't realize that we can have things if we are mindful. And we can have a cottage garden.
You can. You can.
And you could stay under your water allotment. I'm very pay attention to that a lot.
And pruning. Pruning is a big part, and mulching.
Pruning, mulching, being mindful of the plants you plant in there. When is the best time, if you were going to change out your garden to a cottage garden, what is the best time of year to start?
Oh, I always suggest fall. Fall is the number one prime time when it starts to get cooler. Not during the heat of fall, but at the end of fall when it starts to cool down. Mm-hmm. That's when the plants will start developing roots under the ground all fall and winter. And by spring, they're ready to pop.
Okay, so fall is the perfect
time. Fall is the perfect time. The second best time is spring. But you never want to plant all these plants, or any plants, in the summertime. You're going to lose half of them. So don't start doing it in this heat. Why don't we do the planting now, and then in the coolness of fall, start to plant your plants. They'll be happier.
So, Gail, I thank you for being with us today.
You're welcome.
Anytime. Thank you so much. This is really nice because a lot of us really don't realize what we can have.
And you can have a cottage garden.
You can have
So don't listen to people who say you cannot have a cottage garden.
You can have it, just be mindful. Always check your water. Mm-hmm. Every month I go out and make sure my sprinkler systems are working correctly because you can lose a lot of water by just having one broken sprinkler.
You don't even know it's broken.
You don't. I just take and put those little flags in there if I notice something. And being mindful, if you're just mindful, you could do a lot more.
Right.
And with this, it's just choosing wisely what you put in your...
Well, it was a pleasure, Katrina.
Yes, thank you so much. And until next week, this is Katrina Kirkaby, and I'm here with Gail Rose Lamb. Is that a perfect name for her, by the way, Rose? I love that. So this is Katrina Kirkaby with Gail Rose Lamb, Master Gardener, and I appreciate your time and sharing with us.